This is William Evans, and you are listening to A Living World Story. Our guest today is Michael Thompson, architect, friend of fruit trees, and an exemplar of awareness. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Will.
You were among the people who gathered along the river on Sunday afternoon and sang in gratitude to the water.
Yes, I was. That was a beautiful time.
What did you experience at that gathering?
Well, a good number of people in a circle. You were about a hut trip's worth, over a dozen. And everyone was singing and experiencing the water flowing by in the Crystal River in appreciation of water as a natural source, in light of your book, Circulating Source. That was a beautiful thing. I really enjoyed it. Everyone had came away inspired, I think, by that. And it made me think on my way home to Basalt, you know, how it's really the air I'm moving through. I was on my bicycle, so I wasn't separated from the atmosphere. But you know, that of the birds and just all the creatures of nature and all the sources of nature, the air, the water, the soil underneath the path I rode, containing all this life. And I'm just moving through it. Just a great feeling.
And you move through it a lot on your bicycle.
Yeah, I like my bicycle. It's a slower way of traveling than a car, of course. I can supplement it with the bus. I have a car, but it's a 2006 car, and so I try not to put many miles on it. So I only use it when I really have to carry heavy loads or something. But on the bike, I just love the feeling of moving through the air. I realize often, as birds fly sometimes parallel to me, that riding a bicycle is basically flying 4 feet above the ground at the speed of a bird. And I see them flying by me. On a few occasions, I've been riding along the path and seen a bald eagle flying over the river looking for lunch. And I'm roughly the same speed, so I can watch the bird for quite a while. You know, it's just a way of seeing nature on a daily basis. That's all.
And it's a way of being more connected.
More connected, much more connected.
Much more connected than when I'm in my car.
Yeah.
Over the years, I've come to respect your ability to see the big picture.
Mm. Just in terms of nature, it's one of those things that, being observant, you know, I recognize nature's others as, you know, as Bucky Fuller used to put it, fellow crew on spaceship Earth. And just to recognize another creature, plant, and what they need, I learned this from Jerome Ossentowski. To understand a plant and what it wants is to have a relationship with that plant. And to see, and the plant, you know, is grateful, gives you back. So it's like a gift economy. There's no money involved. It's just, you know what the plant needs, you give it to it, and the plant in return is grateful and gives you food. It's just a great awareness to have, I think.
After the singing, we gathered in a talking circle.
Mm-hmm.
What were you most aware of at that river gathering?
I was aware that some of us expressed gratitude for the renewed awareness that we received in that gathering about the water and the flow of life. But then there started sprouting among our group some more aggressive thoughts about, town policies in Carbondale. And herbicides in use on golf courses and pesticide use and people being able to smell chemicals in the environment. And there was some general anger that started building as we went around the circle toward that. And I began to realize that, Carbondale is, I consider Carbondale, in the old adage that Carbondale is the only town in the valley where when they have a parade, there's nobody watching. Everyone's in the parade. That always made me think of Carbondale. And so Carbondale is probably the most involved citizenry in the valley, I think, in terms of a town. And what struck me was that, people in the circle were all gathering on this idea that something needs to be done in the current, policy of the town. And so I thought, there's people that see things both ways. Some people think we need to get rid of the weeds, and some people think we need to smell fewer chemicals and we need to put fewer chemicals on the ground. And these discussions are valid and need to occur. But we need to have I realized when I left and got up to the parking lot in advance of everyone else, I was in a hurry to get back to Basalt. And you had asked me, earlier that there may be a parking problem at the park. So would I mind riding my bicycle? You knew fully well I would prefer to ride my bicycle just because I enjoy it. But I did. And then when I got up out of the talking circle to the parking lot to grab my bike, I suddenly noticed that Richard was the only one who had also ridden a bike. And I had ridden a bike 13 miles and was about to ride 13 more back. In a very enjoyable state, I must admit, but everyone else at the circle had driven an SUV a quarter mile to get there. And I just thought, it would be really great if we all were able to act together in a direction rather than in dispute all the time, and that we could all adopt a sort of a personal responsibility ethic toward the goal we want to reach. Recently, the pandemic made everyone realize that breathing the same air as each other can be dangerous. And so, everyone adopted mask mandates, but there were still disputes, over whether it was a hoax or this or that. And so we, unlike Taiwan and New Zealand and South Korea, were too diverse to act in the same direction. What I fear, and of course, we're coming out of the pandemic, and the vaccine saved us, not our diligence. And what I'm realizing is that we have an even bigger problem ahead of us. We all know it's climate change. It's getting worse and worse every year, and every year the scientists admit it's worse than they thought it was going to be. It's not going to be a pretty picture for our children and our grandchildren. And we need to act together toward this end. And I believe, after seeing Greta Thunberg, a great teenage climate activist, in an interview with Naomi Klein on Democracy Now!, Naomi Klein asked this question I've heard often. Why do you think that your personal choices, will have a big effect? And that was in reference to Greta taking a sailing ship across the ocean instead of flying, or taking a fuel-driven ship. And Greta said that, the personal responsibility admittedly is just a drop in the bucket, not even a drop in the bucket, a molecule in the bucket, okay? But if everyone acted in the same direction with the same sort of personal responsibility, it would be a bigger thing. It wouldn't be evaluating each person's actions, saving a half a gallon of gas a day or something, as meaningless, but all together, like a spring to a river and a river to an ocean, would have a bigger effect. We all are in community. I'm reminded of my cousin, a dear cousin of mine, who very closely followed and believed in all the QAnon conspiracy stuff. And I had a big argument with him on the phone, and he called me sheep. He said, "I'm a sheep wearing a mask." And I was kind of taken aback by that sort of attack. And I said, "Well, actually, yeah, I am a sheep. We're all sheep. I'm I'm a Fauci sheep and you're a Trump sheep, you know, because you're following all the dictums that come out of the mouth of this guy that was our president. A lot of people find what he says to be false, patently false, but then there's about a quarter of the voters in this country who think everything he says is true. So how do we act together toward climate change? That's my question. How do we do it? I think we need to each take a personal responsibility ethic and say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I have some things I need to do. My house is not, you know, it was built in 1898, and I could do some great energy adjustments to it to save energy. So I'm not perfect. I just like to ride my bicycle.
Well, it seems to me what you're telling me is you have personally made a commitment to a living world story.
Mm-hmm.
Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. That's accurate.
Can you tell us about that choice and when and how you made it?
I was having children, having my wife and I having our two children, and that's what really turned me in a direction toward wanting to be personally responsible for, you know, the climate of their future, the world of their future, the economy of their future. And so my choices are based on that. And now I have one grandchild and another one on the way. So same thing, only farther, you know, more distance. We need to pull together. We need to all act together. And we need to, I know it's hard to all agree on the same thing. It seems almost impossible these days. But if we don't do it, there's not going to be a vaccine that's going to save us from climate change. We need to act all together.
Well, and you've been acting in, I like to playfully think, lovely and strange ways for years. I remember when you showed me your sack of apricot seeds,
mm-hmm.
and told me you were taking your bean shooter and shooting them into the banks of the irrigation ditches and the river, wherever you thought it might be nice to have a fruit tree.
Yes, yes, that's my only firearm. It's a slingshot, and I strictly use it for seeds. But yes, it was just an exchange, a gift exchange with my apricot tree that I planted in 84, and then I renovated my house and ran all the roof gutter water right by it, and it grew just like crazy. It's two stories tall. I get over 100 pounds of apricots a year off of it. It's a very healthy tree, and the only thing that my tree that I named Maud after Maud Elmont, my neighbor who was born in the early 1890s. She's gone now, but she was a delight when she lived in my neighborhood. And she was the one who really planted all these apricot trees around the neighborhood, gave them away. She had 31 of them in her yard.
31 apricot trees? You've never told me that before.
She just could not bring herself to uproot a single one. And anyway, so I named the tree Maud, and I have an exchange with Maud. All she wants me to do is plant her seeds, and she gives me all this fruit. I mean, I have so much fruit. I give it away to Bosque Restaurant in Aspen. I give it away to all my neighbors. I prune the tree every winter to get blossoms indoors with it, and the fruit gets bigger. And so it's a benefit all the way around, and all Maud wants is for her babies to grow. So I plant them all over the place. When I'm gone, you'll see them.
So to use a different metaphor, it's a bit like you've found the joy in making a commitment on your skis to turn in deep powder on a steep slope. And you've got a rhythm now with life-sustaining living world story decisions, mm-hmm. and choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just looking at other creatures and saying, what do you need? How can I help you?
Has it gotten easier for you to make one commitment after another and your turns?
Oh, yeah. I like that, linking my turns. Absolutely. It just brings about an awareness, you know? It's like a writer. When a writer writes often, they become more observant, right? Because they want to record the details of their observation. And so their eyes and their ears and their smell senses get sharper. That's what happens to a writer when they are trying to communicate. Same thing with a nature lover, a permaculture activist, or a gardener. You plant what you plant, and you take care of it like a child. Just give it what it needs, and be proud that it, you know, grows strong and healthy and gives you back. It's a beautiful thing.
This is KDNK, and you're listening to a conversation with Michael Thompson about his choices. So this action of repetitively being personally responsible for what you want to be makes you better at it. And in other words, you're growing into what you want to be.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's no, I'm basically erasing conflicts within myself. By not having, you know, I still do, as I said before, I still do have some things like my house that isn't as well balanced in the energy world as it could be. But virtually everything else in my life I feel quite comfortable with, just because I feel a balance with it.
Did you get a sense of balance in the circle on Sunday?
I did. I got a sense of balance, and then I got a sense of out of balance. And the out of balance was toward the end when our observations of inspiration began to fade into observations of you know, bad toxins in our environment. And you know, all those things are valid, and we do need to address the toxins in our environment, absolutely. But, you know, to go and rail against them is really more successful when we come with solutions. I remember very distinctly my old friend, Doc Phillip, here in town, great chiropractor, and my homebrewing buddy. And we've known each other for 20 years or so, homebrewing. And I loved that he observed back in the 70s that when the town ran low on their budget and had to stop herbicide spraying in town park, he came back after, I forget what it was, I think 7 years, and said, well, now you've not sprayed for 7 years, so town park is now organic, and so we want to have a celebration. We're going to call it Dandelion Days. And then he taught me, because he was making this wonderful Carbondale dandelion ale of roasted dandelion root, which gave a particularly unique flavor to his beer, I learned from him that you can eat the whole plant. And I've since, you know, welcomed the dandelions in my garden in the spring instead of railing against them, and found delicious ways to consume that first nutritious plant that shows up in the spring. And by eating it, I reduce its ability to overtake the whole garden. And it's amazing to me that that dandelions are considered an invasive species. They're actually invasive food.
Well, the lovely woman who created the song we sang at the river, Katrina Blair,
Katrina,
also has a song called The Dandelion Ditty. And we've got a copy here. Maybe we can weave it into this conversation.
That would be lovely.
Because it's illustrative of how we perceive things.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a yard full of dandelions, and they're an early indicator for me of how the bees are doing.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
And we aren't seeing many bees this mm-hmm. year here in Carbondale, which is a concern. And it's more of a concern because I checked with Rose out at Sustainable Settings, and she said, oh, we have lots of bees this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they went through a phase of realizing they had too many hives cut back on the hives, so the wild pollinators had more feed, but they've reached a better balance.
Right.
And we go from, you know, if we can get into balance, we can relate to source with more awareness, and we may see things happening with herbicides that are a greater concern than we realized.
Agreed. I observe the bee populations every spring when my trees blossom. So I have an old apple tree, probably 95 years old, and the apricot tree I planted in 84, and I have a plum tree and a cherry tree as well. And I watch the blossoms carefully. Last spring, 2020, I had almost zero honeybees on my apricot blossoms, the first ones to show up. I had a lot of wild bees, mason bees, leafcutter bees, bumblebees, but not a lot of them, just a variety during the day. But then I went out at night with a headlamp on and was amazed to see that the moths were working very hard and in great numbers to pollinate my apricot tree during the night. And the same thing happened this year. One of my neighbors was a beekeeper, but he moved away. So nobody in my neighborhood is a beekeeper at the moment. I'm looking online at some various methods people have discovered for building housing for bees and just putting it up in some very tall trees and leave them alone, let them have their honey for the winter. Don't mess with them, just give them housing so that they increase pollination. Because this year my apricot tree has bundles of apricots on it. Areas of, like the pollinators came and they focused on one branch and missed two others, you know, and they did this whole branch completely and it's loaded with apricots, but next to it are two branches with only two or three on them.
Really?
Yeah, so I'm like, okay. Whatever. I mean, I don't know how they work, but it's sort of like they were social creatures coming in as a little cloud, doing one branch and then leaving or something. But whatever. It's my freezer is full of apricots. I really don't need a harvest this year.
So just a note, Corwin Bell is coming to teach a beekeeping class this weekend.
Oh, great.
At Sustainable Settings. But the bees function cooperatively in a group.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had that experience with human beings lining up on a living world story, thought, or action?
Sure.
Tell us one of those.
Well, I didn't experience it, but I think a couple of the people at our talking circle did experience a Standing Rock demonstration, which actually succeeded over a long period of time, but that XL pipeline is shut successfully. Don't think they're ever going to be able to bring it back online. So that was a successful thing, but it was a group of people all focusing on one purpose. Nobody varying or wavering from the main purpose, which was to get this thing stopped for the ecological health of a community of Native Americans and others downstream, everyone downstream. Your book, Circulating Source Water, you know, brings that to light really well, that water is pure when it is on the mountain as snow, and then it goes down the river, and you wouldn't want to drink it very far from the mountain because there's all kinds of things in it that are not going to be healthy for us. So acting together toward the ecological health of our environment is important. And we live in an area where if we're trying to create a local food economy, our watershed and our food shed are pretty much the same thing. We have three watersheds that are in our local food network, that being the Roaring Fork River, the North Fork of the Gunnison, from Paonia down to Delta in the Colorado River, from Glenwood to Parachute, basically. or Grand Junction. Those three river valleys and those three sections of them are our food shed. And we need to focus on making sure that the water that we use to grow our food is good, clean, healthy water. And wouldn't it be awesome if someday our children could go fishing and just drink from the stream and not have to worry about getting ill? That would be amazing.
Well, that's certainly what Katrina has been saying to me and belaboring in her unrelenting resistance to my cutting out her drinking water from the river years ago.
Right.
So based on your experience, Michael, you think it's possible for humans to shift into a living world story?
I think it's not only possible, but essential. We have to. I think nature's got it in for us if we don't.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Will.
This is KDNK, and you've been listening to a conversation with Michael Thompson about the choices he is making, finding his balance in a living world story. Thank you for listening.